What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA. This is episode number 149. My name is Jared. I'm here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about the results from BKFC 31, the first card in Denver. We're going to have a focus on the big UFC 280 pay-per-view. Namely, will we see Islam Makhachev live up to the hype and beat the ever-dangerous Charles Oliveira? Will Aljamain Sterling prevail against TJ Dillashaw, who he has frequently accused of doping already? What about Peter Yan versus Sean O'Malley? Is it too much for O'Malley at this early stage still in his career? Or will he surprise us all with a major victory over a former champion? All this and more on today's SWAT MMA. But first, you know what time it is. Get your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
This week's weed of the week is brought to you by Binoid CBD, which is, of course, your number one source for the highest quality and effective products made from hemp-derived CBD, Delta-8 THC, and other all-natural cannabinoids. If you want to save 20% and more on your orders, you simply need to go to SWATMMA.com, click on the cool stuff button, and follow the links for some special listener-only offers. What are we smoking on, Paul?
Today we are smoking on some Fruity Pebbles OG.
Fruity Pebbles OG. This is a new one, man. It sounds like it might have a slightly sweet smell and taste, sir.
Yeah. It definitely does. So this one is going to be a mixer of Green Ribbons, Granddaddy Purple, and some Tahoe Alien.
Oh, shit. Those are actually pretty nice genetics. The Green Ribbons I'm not familiar with, but I've smoked Tahoe Alien. And what was the other one you said?
Green Ribbon. Granddaddy Purple.
Granddaddy Purple is an all-time classic. Granddaddy Purps.
Yeah.
Several of my friends in Colorado used to grow that strain. I used to smoke that shit all the time, man.
It's a classic.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes a good solid backbone to a lot of colorful strains. You know, this weed, when we're breaking it down, it's very pretty looking.
Yeah.
Lots of nice greens, lots of nice purples in there, lots of nice orange hairs in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to admit, it does have kind of a sweetish taste. I don't know if I would honestly describe it as fruity, but there's definitely a sweetness on the exhale with this weed. It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
What kind of terpenes are we looking at?
So we do have quite the little litany of terpene profile here.
Ooh, litany. So, Paul's using big words. Yeah, shit, homie. Now, we need a sponsorship when you use words like litany.
So we got 12.6 milligrams of some pinene.
Okay, pinene.
Limonene in there.
What was the next one?
Limonene.
Okay, limonene. That mixture of the pinene and the limonene.
That's probably where you get that fruity taste.
Yeah, sure. It is. The pinene is kind of like it sounds. It's got that piney kind of scent and smell to it. And you mix that with some of the lemon lime.
It's like a citrus.
It can give you this kind of like fruity, citrusy flavors. That's probably where a lot of that is. What was the last one?
That's it. Oh, that's no, it was a little linalool.
Linalool, yeah. That's why this tastes so nice.
Yeah.
And I like it because it doesn't have a lot of myrcene in it, which
if
you've been listening to the show the past few weeks, you know we've been heavy on the fucking indicas. And sometimes that myrcene is the one that's real strong in indicas and gives you that couch lock feeling when you're smoking weed. So just a little tip. Right. Just a little tip. If you live in a place that does not or has dispensaries until you're getting terpene profiles with your weed, and you're looking to avoid, you know, the tired feeling, simply avoid cannabis that has the myrcene listed as the, you know, in those top three terpenes and pick something else.
Yeah, that's one thing I do like a lot about a lot of the dispensaries down here in Vegas is there's a lot of guys and girls who are the bud tenders that will find you the right stuff you're looking for. And
Exactly. This is something that you can always ask your dispensary about. And any decent dispensary, they're going to – if your bud tender doesn't have that information, they're going to be able to get it for you.
Yeah, and it's, a lot of them have it like broke down on their menu as well.
For sure.
Yeah.
We're going to fire this joint up, and I just want to remind people, if you live in a state we know where you don't have legal cannabis, you can find a lot of very similar strains terpenes and flavors from Binoid. Follow those links. You know, yep, it is how we earn a little bit of money on this podcast. You can help support us by buying from them also. But these are quality products that can give a decent solution for you.
You can also find that link in the description in our YouTube
channel. Yeah, it's in our YouTube channel too. And these provide nice solutions where the THC levels is a different kind of THC. Like Delta 8 THC is a different chemical compound than what we get from the cannabis plant, but its effects are similar, just a little bit milder.
Yeah.
So check that out from our website or from our links in our video. We're going to keep smoking down, and hopefully you are as well. And let's slide into some combat sports, Paul.
Yeah, so last week in our last episode, we talked so much about how it was a huge weekend for boxing.
We did.
So now I think we're heading into another huge weekend, but now we're in the MMA world. You know what I mean? This is probably one of the biggest cards of the year, I would say.
It's so big. In fact, why don't we clear out kind of the smaller stuff before? Yeah. Like, let's touch on that boxing results from you know, our episode from last week. And then let's discuss that BKFC event a little bit. And then let's dive into this. It's got to be one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year that the UFC is putting forth here. So what about, let's start with Wilder versus Helenius.
Yeah.
No real big surprise at the end result. I was surprised at the first round nature of it all.
Yeah, I was quite surprised it was in the first round too. And then also off his back foot.
Yeah, you know, we had the quick KO from Wilder moving backwards. And I'm not trying to throw any shade at Helenius here, but if you watch that video, I mean, he literally got hit with the knockout punch while his chin was lifted up in the air. I mean, those are mistakes you don't want to make against any boxer, let alone the most dangerous knockout artist of our time.
Yeah, and I do think a big part of the reason why his chin was up in the air like that, too, is he tried to walk down, you know, a guy like Wilder who's long and rangy, and then he did it like trying to bully him into the corner. And like, I just don't think that's the right game plan going in against a guy who hits like Wilder.
I agree. It was dangerous and foolish.
Yeah.
And resulted in a quick KO for Wilder, who had an interesting reaction afterwards. I mean,
he ends up crying in the press conference after the fight about just kind of the business of boxing. And I feel like, from my point of view, it was a lot of the things he said were because of things that have happened to him as of late. So let's first of all, he goes in and talks about how people don't realize how this is not just a sport. You know, fighting is like life and death sometimes.
Paychecks and mouths to feed and a job.
Exactly. And, you know, trying to take care of your family for generations and stuff of that nature. You know what I mean? And it then kind of starts to break down and starts crying. And I do think it kind of draws some parallels with his career, because let's just look at how things have been going for him. Before the Fury fight, he was probably the biggest draw in the heavyweight division.
Yeah, I think certainly here in America.
Especially in the U.S., yeah.
Yeah.
And I do think with that comes a lot of, you know, yes men and different kind of sponsors that aren't necessarily going to be there for you when the going gets tough. And not saying the going's getting tough for Wilder, because
He's huge. He's a draw. He still has talent. He proved that over this weekend. But let's not act like he wasn't exposed by someone who's a far superior boxer. And his power was almost enough to overcome it still. But everybody's always known that Deontay Wilder is a very special talent whose talent is so fucking good that it makes up for a lack of fundamental skills. He has some, but not a lot. And Tyson Fury is such a talented boxer. He was able to expose that. But that still doesn't mean Deontay Wilder is not good enough to beat everybody else. I mean, now they're talking about matching him up with Andy Ruiz as a final eliminator to see who faces Fury for the mandatory. But before we get into that, how did you feel about seeing Wilder cry, being comforted, you know, by his boy behind him with the hugs and everything? And what do you think of that is about his mental state? Is that a warning sign about his mental state when it comes to fighting? Or is that just emotion boiling over in the moment?
I think it's a bit of both. I think it's, like I said, a product of what the boxing industry has kind of done to him in the last 3-4 years. But I do think also it could be like the damage that has been done to his psyche and mentally that, you know, because like he did say, like, people die in this sport, man. And like, and not only that, Andy Ruiz is a perfect example. 1 week, Andy Ruiz is the fucking first Mexican-born heavyweight champion, and he's the greatest guy. He's going to beat Joshua again He's fighting for headlines, and people kind of know who he is. But
he's trying to get his respect back.
Yeah, and we've seen that over the history of boxing. Like, the heavyweight champion is propped up on such a different level than all the other champions in boxing. And
yeah.
I do think that brings, like I kind of said before, like a lot of negative people into your life that leech on and, you know, they freaking get you certain things that are there when you're at the top, that when you're no longer at the top are no longer there. And it affects a ton of boxers. And I do think it's affect Deontay Wilder in a way that he now feels the need to bring that to light and hopefully and possibly make some kind of change, which I would hope that. The mental side part of it is where I think things could be kind of unraveling for him, because now how he handles all that happening to him going forward will kind of decide where he is, you know what I mean?
Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens with him moving forward with Ruiz. I would favor him to most likely win that fight as well, but I don't have a lot of interest in seeing him versus Fury again, but that's a very fluid situation with the Usyk belts, etc. But let's talk about the rest of boxing. We saw Shields Marshall, where Shields in a very is a great fight. That was an absolutely great fight.
Yeah,
two women at the top of their game, where Shields once again proves she's the best in the sport. I mean, when it comes to female fighters, I think that she's just a step above even the Katie Taylors and the Amanda Serranos and others. Clarissa Shields is a very special boxer.
Yeah. So my question to you is, where does she go from here? Like, we did talk about a little bit last week that, like, a lot of people wanted her to win so they could do the to win so they could set up another fight rematch, and stuff like that. Do you think that they try to use that amateur victory as some kind of wedge to get a rematch?
To do a trilogy?
Yeah.
I don't think so, actually. I don't think there's going to be a lot of interest outside. I'm not really interested in it.
Yeah.
I don't hold much weight behind the amateur victory. Mm-hmm. It's a fun thing to talk about, especially when they were both undefeated and coming now. But, I mean, Clarissa's just taken her game up a whole nother level.
Yeah, it was a good fight, though.
Marshall won some rounds, you know. I mean, she's no walk in the park.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything left for Clarissa Shields to do in this sport. I think she's going to return her focus to MMA in the upcoming PFL season. She's probably going to have a fight on one of these fucking cards here, and it would take something big to get her back into the sport.
Yeah, possibly. Especially after how we saw...
She's got a lot of mandatories coming up. I mean,
yeah, well, not only that, based on how we saw PFL was paying a lot of those guys, I bet you she's getting a fat check from them as well.
Yeah. And there's a lot less pressure. I mean, she's already lost over there now, too. And it doesn't affect her status. I mean, I bet there's still people that are watching her box this past weekend and don't even know she's fucking around in mixed martial arts. Like, she doesn't have any brand damage if she takes losses over there in the PFL.
Yeah, not at all.
It's pretty much all upside in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably what she's going to stick with.
Maybe.
You know, there's still a chance of her getting a big payday against Kayla Harrison. It's still a possibility. I mean, Harrison would murder her, but there's still a possibility.
Yeah, it could happen, I guess. Well, let's talk a little bit about Kambosos Haney, too. Same thing happens again. Nate's decision on Haney's side.
I thought Kambosos made a better showing of himself.
Yeah, I did, too.
But
still wasn't enough.
No surprise there.
Yeah. I think Haney's the man right there. At that, like, I know I said it before after the first fight, after the second fight, too, I feel like even more now. It's like he's the guy everyone's going to be chasing now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the big fights.
You are correct. And I'm excited we can move past. I think Kambosos, he was smart, man. He won the titles from Lopez. Mm-hmm. He's unified. He gets his big fights. He's smart to include that rematch clause in there. Because this is it, man. Make your fucking hay while you can.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure he got paid handsomely for both of those fights. Mm-hmm. He he had his big moments. No one can take away from him his accomplishments of being a unified fucking lightweight champion, four belt fucking holder.
Yeah.
Like, kudos, man. But I wouldn't be surprised if he retires now at this point. I wouldn't be surprised at all. I'm not saying he has to. I don't think that he's a terrible fighter or anything of that nature. It's just
kind of like we had just spoke about. It's the nature of boxing, like the means at which it's going to take to try to get back to what he could possibly have been when he was champion. They're just not there. Like, you know what I mean? It's not. There's too many guys in the queue waiting in line for him to get back there. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So, but I mean, I thought he did great. He made a great run.
Yeah.
He did well. He improved in the rematch. I thought still not enough to beat, you know, the man at 135 right now. Mm-hmm. And we'll see what the future holds. I'm more excited about that than I was about that fight.
Yeah.
Now let's round out the recaps by talking about BKFC 31, which first of all took place in the suburbs of Denver, Colorado, a place called Broomfield, which I'm quite familiar with. I grew up in Colorado Springs. I've been to Denver a million fucking times. It had 10 fights on BKFC 31, including the headlining bout that had a new interim champion. It also had a lot of UFC fighters on there. Mm-hmm. Four and a handful of Bellator fighters on there as well. The card was pretty exciting.
Yep.
Overall, one fight I would like to talk about that featured a couple former MMA fighters and UFC fighters was Chris Camozzi versus Bubba McDaniel.
Yeah, that was a freaking 36-second knockout or something like that?
Yeah, Camozzi just went off. It was pretty impressive, really. I had no idea that both of those guys were actually going to be on the card fighting each other. Somehow I just missed that in all the lead up.
We were supposed to have another UFC guy, but he was unlicensed by the... We had Melvin Gillard was supposed to be on this card too.
Yeah, Melvin Gillard was scheduled to be on the card, and he...
He has like license took away for being old.
Dude. I like Melvin Gillard. I've been a fan since back in the day, and he doesn't have any more business fighting, man. I don't want to see this kid. He's not a kid anymore. I don't want to see this middle-aged man get knocked the fuck out anymore.
Yeah,
I admire. He's all heart, man. He's getting out there trying to earn a paycheck. I get it. But, man, he's going to wind up like Bubba McDaniel getting knocked out in 30 fucking seconds.
Yeah.
I mean... So, but Chris Camozzi beats Bubba McDaniel in a very exciting bout. We also had some heavyweight action with Josh Copeland fighting Levi. It looks like it's pronounced Levi, but I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Levi Da Costa, which I was surprised how good Copeland looked. He's now 1-0. He had nice movement, man.
Yeah.
He did pretty well, and his knockout was clean and crisp. And I was pretty impressed. But what really stood out on the card, honestly, was the main event. Mike Richmond going up to get that interim title against Doolittle. Look, these guys are pretty small. I mean, Doolittle's 5'7". Richmond's only 5'9". And they're fighting at 185 pounds. So, like, they're fucking... thick as fuck.
Yeah.
And Richmond has gone out a lot, you know, and proclaimed himself as the greatest bare-knuckle fighter alive. Going into this, he was 4-0-1. And the strategy employed by Doolittle was pretty interesting. He came in really low and wide, like almost like a wrestler going in for a takedown, practically. And then he was just swinging like a lot of body shots. coming in, and it kind of took Richmond a minute to come back from that. And in fact, Isaac Doolittle whooped his ass for an extended period in the second round to the point where I thought it was over. I was like, that's it. I mean, I guess Richmond is not amongst the best bare knuckle fighters in the world, because Isaac Doolittle was teeing off punch after punch after punch, but somehow Richmond just covers up, absorbs all the punishment, then he comes out and gets the KO in the third round. to win the interim title. It was one of the most insane comebacks I've seen in this young sport.
Yeah.
And he sets himself up a showdown with Lorenzo Hunt.
Yeah. I mean, if he really wants to prove he's the best fighter in the BKFC and in the world, that's the guy you got to beat.
And he, you know, he hands Doolittle his first loss. Doolittle's now sitting at 3-1, and Richmond's now 4-0 with the one no contest, I do believe, and three KOs. I don't know how he matches up though against some of these guys that have such a height advantage coming in at 5'9" the way he is.
Hunt's not like the tallest guy though.
No, but Hunt's.
He would have to. I think he's like 6 foot, maybe. So it wouldn't be like crazy height difference, but Lorenzo Hunt's another guy. He's a fucking unit too. So I'm actually kind of excited to see that.
There's some really, really intriguing fights coming through in BKFC at the upper echelon of these divisions. We're still getting a lot of raw talent in the bottoms of the divisions. Okay, true, but
I'd say the one thing you have to give like the BKFC kudos for is now bringing over, like you said a little bit prior to this, about how many different guys you had, UFC vets and Bellator vets and people from other combat sports. You have to kind of tip your cap to the BKFC because they're doing the right signing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's all these other organizations that bring in a lot of these, you know, other UFC guys, mm-hmm. other Bellator guys, ONE FC, all the different, you know, all the different organizations that come along, and very few don't live long because they go after the biggest free agent and they pay them the most money, and then they fizzle out because there's all this funding that they didn't thought they had, and nothing panned out. But on the other side, BKFC in the beginning kind of has always believed in a lot of these, like, not like, because don't get me wrong, now they're starting to get some actual like stars from like Bellator, UFC, stuff like that. Before, it was like they believed in some of these like more raw guys and some of these more even raw like UFC fighters like Artem Lobov and Jason Knight and people
Julian Lane.
that they kind of believed in to put this organization on their back, and now it's gotten to a level now that, like you kind of said, the talent pool is like
the talent pool is getting deep, like, you know,
and it's starting to get deep, and that kind of goes into what we've got going on next week.
Yeah, we had some big announcements from David Feldman, the president of the BKFC, on some major signings that they have done, including, of course, Greg Hardy, who we're no fan of on this show, and we're not going to pretend that we are right now, but that doesn't mean that there isn't some intrigue.
Yeah, it's undeniable this man that this is the
fighting in like, bare knuckle boxing. I mean, holy fuck.
Yeah.
But another major signing, and one that they're teasing a potential showdown with Hardy being, is MMA veteran Todd Duffy is now fighting in the BKFC. And Todd Duffy is going to be appearing on our show next week to share that news and more with our audience. We're pretty excited about that. Mm-hmm. And we're hoping that there's rumors now. Feldman was hinting pretty strongly that he could be Greg Hardy's opponent. I don't think the contracts have been signed yet.
Yeah.
But we're hearing, you know, that this is a possibility as well, from the ears that we have inside BKFC. And that would be a very exciting matchup because we all know the size of Greg Hardy.
Yeah,
but Todd Duffy's a very large man as well. He's clocking in around 260 now. He's 6'3". And I mean, he's so jacked. He's been on the cover of Muscle and Fitness magazine.
Yeah.
Like, this is a guy that he's fucking big. And yes, he's been retired for a minute, but he doesn't have a lot of the wear and tear that a lot of UFC heavyweights have. He's only had 12 fights. He's 9-3, his very respectable fucking record. He's been out of the game for a minute. Yeah, absolutely. So we're really looking forward to sitting down and talking with Todd and sharing that with our audience next week.
Yep. So that being said, let's dive into it. So this weekend we have UFC 280, Oliveira versus Makhachev. A real landmark, you know, I'd say, pay-per-view for the year for the UFC here. We got some real big matchups all coming down to the vacant lightweight title. between Charles Oliveira and Islam Makhachev.
Now, let's refresh our listening audience as to why that title is vacant, because in all reality, Charles Oliveira is the champ. I mean, he missed weight by like a half a pound in his last fight, so technically he was ineligible to even have the title. He was stripped of the title and therefore could not win the title, even with a victory, so it's technically a fucking vacant one right now, but everybody knows Charles Oliveira is the goddamn champ.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, technically it is a vacant title that he could win again to become some crazy version of a two-time UFC champ. I hope they don't say that every time they...
They're going to.
Because...
They're going to talk about it all night long.
That's just fucking silly, but okay.
But, let's not start there, though. That is our main event.
No, there's a lot. There's a lot on this fights. Fucking card. Before we get to the top heavy three co-mains, for that matter... Let's talk about your favorite from the undercard, sir.
I'm going to go with Volkan Ozdemir versus Nikita Krylov.
Okay, this is a light heavyweight contest.
Yeah.
Which Volkan Ozdemir, I mean, his nickname is No Time because for a long stretch of it, he was getting people out of there really quickly. Isn't that right, Paul?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Krylov, on the other hand, has 22 first-round finishes in his 28-fight victories, so he doesn't fuck around either.
Not only that, he's coming off one of the most devastating knockouts I've ever seen of freaking Alexander Gustafsson, and that's a guy who nobody knocks out.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knocks
out. John Jones couldn't knock him out. Daniel Cormier didn't knock him out. Krylov put that fucker to sleep in the first round.
I've never seen someone do that to him. And on the other side, Ozdemir just seems like he's starting to get his career back on track. This is a number 8 versus number 10 matchup too. So this is a light heavyweight division that, you know, is needing these type contenders. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to this fight a lot.
I am too. I think that's one of the more exciting fights on the undercard for me. That's it as well. I don't even know who to predict. Actually, I like Krylov in this fight. Well. He's somehow, even with those statistics, he's pretty underrated.
Yeah.
So I think he's going to make a
minus 170 favorite. That's not, and Ozdemir is a plus 145 underdog. So
plus 145, huh?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, they're solid odds, but like it's nothing. Nothing you're gonna freaking. Nothing that's gonna change your life. another real big fight I like under the prelims. It's actually the main event of the prelims. Mm-hmm. Is Bilal Muhammad taking on Sean Brady? Sean Brady coming off the short notice bout between him and the Leech, kind of a letdown for him. Taking on Muhammad, who is the, you know, kind of going around telling everyone that he's the one who thinks he should be fighting Leon Edwards, considering him and Leon ended in a no contest in the first round and all that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. It was the eye poke in a contest that some would argue Bilal was winning early. I mean, he's 21-3. He's been on a hot streak. He's definitely making a lot of noise in the division. Brady's still undefeated, 15-0.
Well, he's lost the last one, so it's 15-1 now.
Is he?
Yeah, he lost to the Leech. Oh, wait, he won.
No, he won against the Leech, yeah.
Pretty certain. Lost.
I'm just looking at his record online here on the UFC website. They got him as 15-0.
Watch the UFC not update their website. Wouldn't that be such a crazy idea?
Tell me about it, bro. Jesus. But that's another standout fight, absolutely.
I'm looking this shit up, dude.
Why don't you double check and let's check his record and see? Because if it's on Wikipedia, it's 100% real.
I'm thinking of someone completely different right now. I think I'm on drugs.
You're thinking of
I'm thinking of the other dude. I'm tripping.
You're thinking of that dude that in the short notice fight on the Diaz card? Yeah, that was Daniel Rodriguez.
I'm tripping. What happens when you get high sometimes, you know? You think people and other people.
This guy acts like he's smoking weed. Speaking of which, I'm gonna pick up this card.
No, Sean Brady's coming off the win over Michael Chiesa where he whooped Michael Chiesa's ass.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is actually a really, really good fight. I think Bilal Muhammad is honestly the top tier of the division right now. I think his last couple of performances, he's showed that, you know, he belongs with the guys at the top, and I think this is his chance to just put the stamp on his career record that he needs to get a title shot.
Yeah, this is his moment to come out and put on a performance against a young, hot, undefeated prospect.
Yeah.
I don't think he can do it, though. I think Brady's got his number. Okay. So we'll see. We'll see what's up. All right, but what about the main card here? There's a few cards before we get to the top. There's a fight on there that I really like. We've got a lightweight bout between Gamrot and Beneil Dariush.
Yeah.
That's a pretty significant fight. Dariush 21-4-1. Gamrot's 21-1.
And if people don't remember, also, Beneil Dariush was supposed to fight Islam Makhachev two different times and had some injuries that came into effect that stopped that from happening. So he kind of was supposed to get the number one contender fight before Islam was able to get the title shot. Now he's kind of got put in this situation where he's like the odd man left out because he hasn't fought in about a year and a half?
Yeah, it's been a minute now for him.
I mean, his last fight against Tony was real dominant, and I thought that was what was going to really, you know, get him the opportunity to be, you know, fighting for the title sometime soon. And I think now this is the fight where he has to make a statement, and he has to put on a great performance here. If he loses this fight, he could be in kind of muddy waters because he's been in the UFC for a while, you know what I mean? He's 21-4, which, I mean, that's pretty freaking good record considering. I think he's won 5 in a row. And now, so I think this is his chance. He's got to beat Gamrot if he wants to ever get to the title.
Especially think he's got it? Dude.
Lightweight is such a deep division, too. Like, I don't know. Gamrot's a tough motherfucker, too. We saw in his last fight against Tsarkian, or however you say his name. That was a really fucking good fight, and he was able to win in his first 5-round main event on his own card. Like, that was pretty big for him, and I think now this is also his chance to kind of put his name in the mix, because I feel like because he's kind of newer in the division, no one really talks about him at lightweight because it's so deep. I don't know, man. I guess I'll go with Beneil. What about you?
I like Beneil to go ahead and get this, go ahead and earn his title shot afterwards as well. I think that with a good victory here, he stands a chance at least to get it in.
Yeah.
But now let's talk about a fight that I still can't wrap my head around it, which is Petr Yan against Sean O'Malley. This is 135 pounds. I don't know what to make of this one here, my friend. Why don't we talk about, first off, O'Malley? It still feels like he's a young fighter, Paul, but the truth is he's 27 years old. He's 15-1. He's got 11 knockout victories, 1 submission victory, 3 decisions. Coming off a no contest against Pedro Munhoz at UFC 276, which he says that he was winning. The statistics, when you look at them, show that the strikes were about even. I think O'Malley had one more landed. Before that, he did hand Julian Pavia, or Rulon, I'm not sure how you say his name anymore, a TKO loss. You know, he's got the big win over Almeida. He whooped up on that Chris Moutinho guy. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of top-notch victories. I mean, he's got the win over Eddie Wineland, which was solid.
That was great.
And he fucking KO'd him. You know, and then a lot of these guys are just lower names. So this is his shot. This is his chance to get a big fucking feather in his cap against the former champ. And this is a former champ who's coming off. He's coming off some losses, you know, technically. If you look at his career, he's, you know, in his last 3 fights, he's won 1 and lost 2.
Yeah.
He's got the DQ where he lost his title to Aljamain Sterling. Then he's got the decision win over Corey Sandhagen. Then he's got the split decision loss to Aljamain Sterling.
I didn't think it was a split decision, too. I thought I had unanimous. I thought it was pretty clear-cut who won that fight.
Yeah, he didn't have nothing for Sterling, but Sean O'Malley ain't Aljamain Sterling.
Because here's the thing. Aljamain Sterling took a whole different, like, approach to how to crack the code on Petr Yan.
He did.
He used his, like, wrestling and his superior, like, jiu-jitsu, like, positions to make it so, like, every bit of offense that Yan... Because if you watch that fight, it was early. It was all Aljamain, really. It was all, like, he stopped... he stopped Jan from figuring out his punches, being able to, you know, figure out when to, because I would say that was the biggest difference in the first fight, was how, like, Jan just read everything he was doing and had an answer for everything. So I think this is exactly what Sean O'Malley has to try to do in this fight, but in a different way. He has to find some way where Petr Yan doesn't get any reads on him and doesn't get going. Because I think that's the only chance he really... Because if you watch early in his fights, Jan tends to take a few punches. And I do think it comes from his, like, Muay Thai background. He does take, a few minutes to figure out his opponent. And then he starts doing whatever he's going to do.
He's more dangerous in a five-round fight.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is true, too.
I think that figures to O'Malley's favor is the three-round nature of this fight.
Yeah.
Because if he opens up fast, he can win that first round. Mm-hmm. And then if he's smart, I would say he comes out with a completely different look in the second round. So Jan can't figure him out.
Yeah.
Because, but when Jan, unfortunately for him, you know, we talk a lot about punching versus boxing in the UFC. And I like to nitpick because I don't really think there's much boxing in the UFC. There's a lot of punching. But they always want to just call it, oh, he's got the best boxing. They're not really boxing. But Petr Yan actually uses a lot of boxing technique in his punches. Yeah. And he will walk Sean O'Malley down. He will keep his hands up, his chin tucked, and he will throw 1-2-3s. And I don't know if O'Malley can keep him on the outside. I don't know if O'Malley can beat him in the clinch.
Yeah.
I don't know if O'Malley can even really stuff the takedowns that I think are going to come. I just see this as a very difficult matchup. I see Jan having all the advantages here.
Yeah. Although, here's my one criticism of this fight, is I don't think it does much for Petr Yan if he were to win this fight.
I don't think it does either, because despite the length of time O'Malley's been in the UFC, he's still an unproven commodity as far as how good he is.
Well, I'm just saying that he keeps talking about this idea of he's going to win this fight and then automatically get a title shot. No. That's just not going
to
happen.
I don't even know if he's ready for that yet. I mean, look, I'll tell you who I want to win is Sean O'Malley. I would like Sean O'Malley to come out and dominate and prove everything I'm saying to be wrong and show he is the fucking man and he's ready.
Yeah.
I don't think he's there yet. That's all.
Yeah. That makes sense.
If he takes a severe beating at the hands of Petr Yan right here, his brand is going to be hurt badly. Yeah.
That's true.
A brand that's already been hurt by the loss to Chito Vera. He's managed to come back from that okay now, but he gets his ass kicked here in this spot right now. It's going to be a while before he gets the public back on his side as far as him being the next Conor McGregor.
Yeah,
that's what he wants to be.
Here's the thing. There's two ways I could see it on O'Malley's side if he were to lose this fight. I think he can either go up a weight class, because I think that would be the best thing for his actual, you know, brand if he were to lose this fight. But if he wins this fight, it changes the whole game for him. And I think it changes the whole game. Like, this is a real cornerstone fight. Like, this is either you become the star everyone thought you were, or you figure it out in a different weight class. Because I think if he can't beat Petr Yan, he has no chance against any of these other top five.
No, absolutely not. He can't fuck with Dillashaw or Sterling or Sanhagen. I mean, he's 5'11". He's only 27 years old. There's definitely room on his frame to go up to featherweight. Yeah. I want to be proven wrong. I'm a fan of Sean O'Malley's.
I'm a fan, too.
Like, I want him to win this fight. I will be actively rooting for him. I'm not a denier of what I feel is the truth. I think it's too much too soon. And we'll see. I'm very intrigued by it, though. If it was a five-round fight, I think he had even less of a chance. But I think the three-round nature could work out in his benefit.
And one thing I do have to give, credit to Sean O'Malley going into this fight is he understands that. One thing he said a lot of times in his own podcast and stuff, he's talking about, he's like, yeah, I know this is a big risk. I know this is a big fight. Like, I just think I'm ready for it. You know what I mean? And that's
good for
you. Gotta admire that.
I do.
Absolutely. So, then the co-main event, we have Aljamain Sterling taking on TJ Dillashaw for the bantamweight title.
You know, the very same division that we're talking about.
First defense for Sterling.
First defense after beating Jan in the rematch. You know, he silenced a lot of critics with that win, Paul.
Yeah, I mean, technically it's his second offense.
Technically, but
he's what he himself said that he considers this his first title defense.
Yeah, like we realize that, everybody, but we're just rolling with that too. Mm-hmm. You know, he's making a lot of noise about Dilly being juiced up. Do you think Dillashaw is doping at the moment?
I wouldn't say at the moment, but I think he's just doubling down on what. Because here's the thing. When you're a cheater, there's always going to be that cloud loom over your career for the rest of your career. I hate to be like that, but they name another sport where people test positive for PEDs and aren't viewed as a cheater for the rest of their career. It's every baseball, football.
Like, it's very it's very hard to sell people on the idea that you only did it once and you got caught that first time you did it. Now, it is a possibility.
Yeah.
It could be why he got caught.
Yeah.
It could be because he tried to cheat, the system worked, and it caught him, and he didn't fail before because he never cheated before. This is a fucking possibility, but everybody just thinks he's outsmarting the tests now.
Yeah, because there's
everybody
another...
thinks that's what he did prior to this last one.
Well, that's the thing. Is like there's also another layer to the story. Why? I know it was shit talk at the time, but I hate to bring it up, but...
Say it.
4 or 5 years ago, Cody Garbrandt said the same shit about him on Joe Rogan's podcast and said that he has a way he cheats the systems. That was before he even popped.
See, that's the thing. Before then, you couldn't really put a lot of weight behind it. You could just say he's a hater talking his shit. But then when he pops, then you got to go back to statements like Cody Garbrandt made and look at them in a brand new light. Wow, okay, maybe he was fucking cheating the system this whole time, pulling some fucking Lance Armstrong shit.
And to the point where even during the podcast, because this is where I don't think it was shit talk at the time, because going back on that podcast, when Uriah Faber, who's the owner of the gym and kind of still had a somewhat relationship with TJ, when Cody Garbrandt goes off on that tangent, he's like, right, Uriah? And Uriah's like, I can't say anything, which everyone, you know, kind of sees that as like him trying to save face for possibility of still having a friendship and all that shit.
Well, clearly, because otherwise you'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know if he's doing juice right now, but I definitely know he had in the past. And for the rest of his life, he's going to have to face the questions and the ridicule and the people talking shit about
him. For real. And he doesn't get any sympathy from me. No. But... I'm not willing to just think that he's automatically cheating every time he fights now. Until he fails another test, I'm just not quite on that bandwagon. But he is 36 years old. He's definitely had some wear and tear in his body. That whole trip down the flyweight, no matter how you want to spin it, was going to be tough on him. Mm-hmm. Using the drugs, getting to that weight, getting fucking beat the way he got beat. He was hard on his body. It was a scary cut. I didn't like it when it happened. It was rough. You know, he did have the time off. Due to the suspension.
Well, not only that, he's had more extended time off recently, too, because he ends up tearing his knee up against Corey Sandhagen and then takes another, year and a half off.
So he's got surgeries.
Yeah.
And the
surgeries pile up. He's got both his shoulders have been done. He's had stem cells in both shoulders. He's gotten treatment on most of his body. And knowing that he wrestled his whole life at the D1 level and all that kind of stuff, I know there's got to be some kind of other injuries that have gone on that are coming up from his past and, you know, just the wear and tear of it all.
Right. Now, let's talk about some things that even if he is cheating, what these drugs do not do. They do not make you have any extra talent.
Yeah.
They do not make you learn a better and higher fight IQ. Yeah. All right. It is simply a physical enhancement to a natural talent that's already there. TJ Dillashaw, with or without drugs, is a hell of a good fighter. Yeah. Like, his combinations, his movement, the things that he does, that doesn't come from a PED.
Yeah. No.
So
he's great. He
is a very, very talented fighter who I think still has something in the tank here. And I'm frankly very happy that this fight is happening irregardless of anything. It's not that I'm a TJ Dillashaw fan. It's that I'm a fan of the lineal champion losing his belt the real way. Which to me, whether or not you like it or not, he's still the champ at 135. He never lost his title in the cage. He was stripped. And this is a way for Aljamain Sterling to either solidify his actual title reign and his credentials and for the lineal title to match up with the real fucking interim title that was created and then changed into a real one or however they fucking did it. And it doesn't really matter to me who wins. I would like to see Sterling do it, I suppose. But if Dillashaw does, then okay. I'm not willing to say that he cheated to win.
So let's take it from a little bit further. So let's take all the talk away from the fight. Let's just look skill for skill. Who do you think has the biggest advantage in this fight going in? Is it Dillashaw or Dillashaw. Is it Sterling?
I
think so.
I feel Dillashaw's striking and movement is just. I think he's a dick in real life. I don't like him. I don't like the fact that he cheated. I've never been Dillashaw.
Yeah.
But I mean, when people are good, they're good.
Yeah.
Dillashaw's fucking hella good. Yeah. And I just haven't seen enough to say that he's lost it yet. Maybe we'll learn that.
And that's the thing. One thing I do think is a different fold into this fight, too, is Dillashaw is coming in with a same wrestling acumen that that you have on Sterling's side that you can't really. Because a lot of times when we go into these fights with Aljamain Sterling, we talk about the wrestling advantage, and that's what he tends to, and his biggest and best performances are when he uses that wrestling advantage, and that's kind of what catapults him into these bigger, and then have got him up to this level with these big fights and his good submissions and stuff like that. And that's why I do think the X factor is on Dillashaw, because I think he's got more technical and crisp striking, whereas I think when you look at Aljamain Sterling, he's almost kind of like a freestyle fighter.
He still has awkward, strange angles that he uses.
He doesn't really use any like strict boxing. He doesn't really use any like strict kickboxing or Muay Thai. He just has this weird mixture style like striking where he throws awkward strikes, and then sometimes he'll throw some elbows that I've seen him throw are just like freaking devastating. And that's why I feel like this could be a really weird fight if it ends up staying on the feet. Because I feel like you're going to have Dillashaw, who's going to be throwing these technical combos and stuff like that. And then you're going to have Aljamain Sterling on the other side, who's going to try to make the striking game in this fight complete chaos if I was him. You know what I mean? Because he has to understand and know that Dillashaw is going to be more crisp and technical. So he's going to go in there probably trying to just create havoc and throw crazy, awkward strikes and try to knock Dillashaw out. And that's why I feel like this is going to be such a great fight, because I think it's going to be the real style versus ability to finish, because I think that's honestly a really big difference in their careers as well. Like, yeah, Dillashaw's had some good TKOs, but like Sterling, what he does is he like breaks his opponents down. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's going to be. We're going to see how good TJ Dillashaw's like gas tank is in this fight, I think. Because I think it's just going to be complete chaos from start to finish. And I actually think Sterling's going to retain the title here by decision.
I'm rooting for Sterling to win. I'm picking Dillashaw, though. I think he's a little bit too much, but we'll see. I hope Sterling pulls it off.
By what?
Decision.
Decision.
Yeah.
Yeah, both these guys have good chins. Only time we really seen Dillashaw knocked out was against Dobson, who's one of the hardest hitters ever. And then fucking when he dropped down and got knocked out by Cejudo. Mm-hmm. And then on Sterling's side, the really only time we ever got seen him get knocked out was that crazy freak knockout by Marlon Moraes. Outside of that, both these guys have really good chins.
That they do.
So let's talk a little bit about the main event then. So got the lightweight title up for grabs. Got Islam Makhachev taking on Charles Dubronx Oliveira.
Look, Makhachev gets a lot of hype for being Khabib Nurmagomedov's boy. Khabib's out there saying he's going to roll over Oliveira.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan, but we're going to find out. I mean, Makhachev's had 23 fights. He's 22-1. I mean, he has a TKO loss to Adriano Martins back at UFC 192, October 2015. And since then, you know, he's got a decent resume. I mean, let's look at his last few wins. He's got that TKO over Bobby Green. All right, that was fairly solid. He's got a sub over Dan Hooker. Dan's good. Solid. He's got a sub over Thiago Moises. He's got a win over Drew Dober, Davi Ramos. And then, I mean, Cajun Johnson, Gleison Taibu, Nick Lentz, Chris Wade, whatever.
Yeah.
It's not a super impressive resume. The Green Hooker wins are solid, though.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think that his record and his list of accomplishments is even, you can't even hold it up to Charles Oliveira's.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at Oliveira's last few fights. He's got a sub win over Justin Gaethje, a sub win over Dustin Poirier, a sub or a TKO over Michael Chandler, a decision over Tony Ferguson, a win over Kevin Lee. Then it starts good now, but we've got wins over Jared Gordon, Nick Lentz, Timer, Miller, Gaigos, Guida, and these are sub, TKO, KO, sub, decision, TKO, sub.
Yeah.
He holds the most records in he holds the record for the most submissions in UFC history.
Yeah. This is really going to be a fight of styles, too. Because I do think if I am Makhachev, I'm trying to get this to the ground, but he's so dangerous off his back that I just don't even know where it goes from there. Because I definitely do think Charles has the advantage on the feet when it comes to him and Makhachev. Charles has real pop on his punches, and it's strange because we're just starting to see it. I'd say like from the Kevin Lee fight on, you know what I mean? Yeah. That he's just had this different pop in his punches that we had never seen in his career. Justin Gaethje talked about it. He said that literally he had never been hit that hard in his life, and Justin Gaethje's fought some of the best in the whole.
Absolutely. He's gone in there with some real bangers.
With some real bangers, yeah, for real. And he said that was the hardest he's ever been hit in his life. He said he was dazed from the third punch in the fight on. Think about where the fight took place from there. We're talking about Justin Gaethje, who ends up knocking Charles down early in that fight. And it's kind of almost this pattern we've seen in the last three or so fights for Charles, where like he comes in and he tests the waters and really lets you get off some offense, and he sees what you got.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's just all Charles. It's happened in his last three fights. Look at the Michael Chandler fight. Chandler almost finished him. Some people say he had 5 more seconds before that bell rings.
Yeah.
The fight's over, you know what I mean? And then you look at the Gaethje fight, similar thing. He gets knocked down, comes back, gets a sub. The Poirier fight, first round was an absolute war where Poirier hit him with some huge shots that Poirier finishes a lot of people with. That Charles was just able to absorb and then finds a way to win. And I think that's kind of going to be the same formula we're going to see in this fight. I think Islam's got some great wrestling. He's got good enough striking, and I think he's going to put Charles in some dangerous spots in the fight, but I just think Charles Oliveira is going to find a way to win.
I think he is as well. I mean, Makhachev's got a whopping 4 KOs in his 22 victories. He's not known for it. He's got 8 decisions and 10 subs.
No way he's subbing Charles.
He's not subbing Charles. I think that Charles's incredible jiu-jitsu just kind of negates this whole wrestling factor. Because if you can get on top of him, you're going to be in some danger. He's not just going to lay there and let you ground and pound on him.
Yeah.
And vice versa, if he tries to pull guard or something, that's crazy. And you can't really punch with him either. Yeah. Like, I just don't think he can. I think if it comes to a firefight, Oliveira's going to light him up. So I like Oliveira to win handily. I just don't see this Makhachev being the Nurmagomedov, his heir apparent. I just don't. He's not the guy.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I'm not saying he's not talented. I'm not saying he doesn't deserve a title shot. I'm saying he's not the guy to beat Charles Oliveira. Like, this ain't happening. Charles Oliveira is going to win here.
Yeah. I got Charles by second round TKO.
I got Charles by TKO second round as well. Yeah.
I feel like it's just a pattern of how he's been fighting his last couple fights. It's either a sub or TKO round two.
Yeah, he's going to go out and light him up. Yep. He's going to feel him out in the first round, and he's not going to be too worried about the return fire. I mean, he'll be safe, I think, because he's taken some shots here from Chandler, from Poirier, from Gaethje.
Yeah.
But so I think he'll be a little bit safer than he has been perhaps lately, but he's going to go out and he's going to light him up. In the second round, he's going to put him away.
I agree.
And they're going to call him Manu again, which is weird.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. This is going to be a really good card in the end, I think.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Exciting stuff. Look forward to discussing the results next week. And, of course, our conversation with BKFC's latest major signee, Todd Duffy.
Yep, so I think that wraps the show up for today.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Binoid. Follow the link on our website, SWAT MMA. Go to the Cool Stuff button. Follow the links to go to Binoid and save up to 20% on your order.
Yep, you can also click that link in the description. Also hit that subscribe button, hit the like button on the video, drop a comment for us, and then head over to swatmma.com and click on the gear button and buy a t-shirt and support the podcast. And then you can also head over to Instagram and follow us at swatmmapodcast.
Damn, you're asking a lot of everybody, Paul.
Do it or you're dead.
See ya.